You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Welcome to the El Arpa Podcast. This is your host, Enda. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Okay, so this is coming to you direct from Madrid. It's been a week of news, hasn't it, in the English and Spanish speaking world. We'll start with the English speaking world. Do you know this morning that Shakespeare, Christopher Marlowe, has been given co-authorship on some of Shakespeare's historical plays?
No, I haven't, to be honest.
It's been long been suspected, but when it first came out in the 80s, people were kind of dubious about it, but it's been given more academic credence right now. So, I don't know, is this a thing in Spain? Has Cervantes ever been under this kind of scrutiny? Is he the author? Did he collaborate with other people? You know, really, Shakespeare's been put under that microscope for centuries, with varying degrees of intensity. But has that happened in Spain as well?
Not really. No? I think, as far as I know, all of Cervantes' work is, authored by him. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. And going to Spain news now. You guys finally have a government.
Well, that hasn't happened yet, but yeah, I think it's coming. It's kind of like horror movie style. It's coming.
What happened? Yeah.
Well, that the main party that was voting against the government and the only one that could allow them to govern has decided to abstain.
Okay.
In the second round.
Round.
Of the voting, which means that we'll have the president, the same president again.
Okay, so 4 more years, stable governments, happiness.
Well, it's not stable at all. So, in theory it's 4 years, but we'll see how long it lasts.
Okay, let's place a bet. How long do you think it's going to last?
Give it a year.
Give it a year?
Yeah.
That's very
optimistic. Very optimistic, indeed. Yeah, why not? You have to be positive.
Okay, so it's a very loose coalition, no? Minority governments?
Well, it's not a coalition. They're just going on their own. So that's the thing. They're allowing them to govern, but then every time they try to pass a law, they will oppose. So
okay.
They won't be able to do anything.
Very good. Well, we're living in uncertain times.
Which in
times.
A way is probably a good thing.
Why is that a good thing?
I wasn't meant to elaborate on this. No, just, because, it depends. If you agree with the policies, then you'd be annoyed. But if you don't, then maybe it's a good thing that they don't get to do the things that they want to do.
Okay.
But for Spain's stability, it's pretty terrible. Eh?
Rajoy, bit of a character, bit of a cartoonish character. Bit simple sometimes, maybe. Let's be fair here. I think that's a common...
Maybe.
That's a common perception across the political spectrum, I think, of him. At least he's not a Donald Trump character, no? He was a... whose campaign is going into different shades of farce every second of the day. Or even Hillary Clinton, who is very disingenuous on some issues, no?
I guess, if you keep your mouth shut, then there's less chances that... If you're never clear about anything, there's less chances that you're going to put your foot in it.
That's true. In fact, a little tip. I always know you're lying to me but when your lips are moving. So that's a pretty good
guide. That Meghan Trainor song.
it's a telltale sign. So, anyway, that's the first part of the show. We're going to come back with more newsy stuff after the musical interlude. We'll talk to you then. welcome back to part two of the show. So we're going to focus on something that was kind of an event in Spain last week, no? Which was the airing of a Salvados special. Mm-hmm. Very well produced, high production values. A lot of money went into it, obviously, but also a lot of care and a lot of kind of motivation went behind making it, I think. So it's all a fantastic program. Salvados, you're a Spanish native, is a weekly topical program, no, like that tackles issues.
Yeah,
this was a special investigation offshoot, no? Well, because normally they have guests in the studio and they have interviews, no?
Well, it's, yeah, they have interviews and then they go out and to places and report on different things. I mean, they're usually social, sometimes political issues. For example, last night was about euthanasia. So
euthanasia, which is, I didn't see it, but I assume it's about what's happening in the Netherlands, no?
Well, it was actually about a situation in Spain. And, you know, it focused mainly on one doctor that was sent to prison a couple of years ago for allegedly having helped someone to die.
Okay.
Because it's illegal here, obviously. And also talking to a person with a degenerative disease that that wanted to die.
Okay. I think those kind of issues, well, that and abortion are two of the issues that are going to run in Western Europe, but I think over the next few years. Well, for those who don't know what's happening in the Netherlands, basically it's an assisted dying program for people who are tired of life, who are over 70 or 75, but I think they're now trying to extend it to people who are younger and just don't want to live anymore. But those are two topics that are kind of in the news at the moment, but are for other shows, because there's another topic that's in the news that we've dealt with a couple of times before on this show, and that is the refugee issue. But we've focused it mostly on Syrian refugees, but of course there are a lot of African refugees leaving Africa coming to Spain, and that was the subject of the Salvados special, or an investigation by them a couple of weeks ago. And I call it an event because it was released nationally on the same day.
That's right, in
cinemas, also maybe in universities as well, and possibly more places, and people could kind of see it before it aired on national television on a Sunday. So Thursday was the day it was released in kind of specialist locations.
Well, they put out a call before the summer, asking for cinemas who were willing to put it up for free, because obviously, they just wanted to make money for the charity, not for themselves.
Did it generate a lot of interest in that regard?
Yeah, considering, you know, in Madrid there were like 4 or 5 cinemas, and then maybe in total across Spain, maybe 20, something like that.
Yeah.
So, well, it was kind of all right. I think there could have been more places joining, but, you know.
We're closer to this issue, really, geographically speaking, no? Because Spain is quite close to Africa. I mean, we're also business teachers. We teach in company. I have one student who told me during the week of his friends who are afraid to sail in certain parts of the sea during the summer because they're worried about coming across refugees and they don't know what to do.
It's a nice problem to have.
Exactly. Well, you can draw your own conclusions about that. But geographically speaking, we are closer to the problem. Not the problem, but the story.
Yeah.
Do you think it's been forgotten? You know, put in the shade by Syrian refugee story?
Well, probably, yeah. I think they're just seen as two different issues, I guess.
Yeah.
And in Spain, we've had this problem since I can remember, this situation, you know. So I think it's probably one of these things that is in the background, and I don't think it has become any more relevant to people because of the Syrian crisis.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to look at it because in some quarters a Syrian refugee story creates pandemonium and fear as if there's a flood of people coming into the continent, which, you know, personally I don't think is true. But there's not that same fear about Africans, I don't think. I mean, probably because it's not generated by the media. And, you know, you do see a lot of Africans on the street selling stuff, or even when the police come, you can see them en masse kind of moving around the place. But people seem quite indifferent, or it's kind of humorous for them as well. So maybe, does it say something about how, you know, the media can say, well, we have a lot of Syrians coming into the continent, this is a big drama, we're going to be flooded, but you probably have, you know, a very high amount of Africans coming into Spain, into Europe, and they're very visible on the streets as well, but there's not that same hysteria generated, because it's not a topical story, really. It's been something that's been ongoing for years. I don't know, you're a Spanish person, so how would you react to that?
No, I think you're probably right, but that kind of hysteria is more sort of spread throughout Europe from other European countries, because in fairness, we haven't even, I think in total we've got about 60 Syrian people. And, well, in theory, when the shares of people were distributed amongst European countries, I think we were supposed to take something like, yeah, I don't know, 15,000 or something like that.
Well, it's a similar situation in Ireland, that we promised to take more, but we didn't. So I assume most countries have reneged on their initial pledges.
Well, according to the Spanish government, we wanted to take them, but they didn't want to come, which kind of like, I can believe that, I guess. No, I mean, I think it's just cynical.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the Salvados program. As I mentioned, a lot of effort put into this.
Yeah.
This documentary. So what were we watching?
It was basically following the story of the Astral boat, which was a boat that originally belonged to an Italian millionaire, who, by the way, was having the same thoughts as your students and kind of like felt awkward about sailing next to where those refugees were and having problems trying to reach Europe. And so he decided to donate the boat, to an NGO, to a Spanish NGO, who was already trying to rescue migrants, basically.
Yeah. Okay, and it follows the sailors, the crew, the refugees as well. It spends an equal amount of time with all the relevant parties, the people who are backing it before the ship set sail, who are refurbishing it, remodeling it to make it fit for purpose, the people who are interacting with the refugees in the dinghies and the little boats, and the refugees themselves towards the end of the movie, or the documentary. So it's quite even in that sense. What do you think it's trying to say with this piece?
Well, I think the main point was refreshing people's minds about the fact that this is something that is still going on, and that it's going on very, very close to us.
Yeah.
And I think it was just trying to draw attention to the problem, and also a big point was just trying to show how this is being completely left to NGOs and just individuals, and it's not being looked after by the relevant governments.
Well, exactly. I mean, the European Union is quite poor in this specific example, but also with human rights in general, I think. I mean, the institutions are quite weak. They're under-resourced. People don't go to the human rights meetings when they happen in Europe. It's something that should be better, because, I mean, primarily, yes, it's an economic union, but it has developed these ancillary and other elements to the union and to the partnership between different European states, but it doesn't function. And quite clearly, it doesn't function here when it comes to the refugee crisis. Not the refugee crisis, but the movement of Africans from Africa to Europe. But looking at the two parts of the documentary, so we mentioned the fact that people are doing this off their own back, but the second part is with the crew themselves, who come across as quite engaged and very involved in the emotional aspect of it and the mental aspect of it as well. They treat the refugees with care and attention. They talk about how when they touch them with a human touch, you know, they're very grateful for it, because they haven't been touched that way for a long time. They've been trafficked by people smugglers. They've, you know, not only have they gotten, you know, left from the point of departure, but they've got, probably come from other African countries as well. The refugees talk about how they've been imprisoned, beaten, you know, along the way to get to the point of departure, you know. And so, you know, when they're leaving those boats, it's only the halfway point, you know, they've gone through a lot of difficult experiences to get there. And so, you know, their humanity comes out in a very obvious way during the documentary. But they meant to talk about Spain as well and how Spanish indifference maybe comes from the economic crisis. Do you think if the Spanish economy was healthier and better, that people would be more compassionate towards people like this?
Well, I have to say, like, I didn't necessarily... That was perhaps the only part where I thought the conversation was slightly forced, you know, the reflections that people were making. I don't usually like that type of generalization, but I think, well... It is a fact that when people are worried about their own things, you know, they focus on all their problems less.
Well, you know, I think it feeds into, I don't know, fear of jobs being taken. You know, I mean, people are worried about that because that wouldn't make sense in Spain, you know, given the profile of people coming in.
To be honest, I don't think it's the case. The problem as well is like when you're in a dramatic situation, such as like the ones that... the one that they were experiencing, you feel like a lack of support, and you feel very, very lonely, and you feel that it is true that overall, like, they're there on their own, the government doesn't help them.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they were also, like, talking about how the 300,000 euros that they spent just on getting the boat up to speed came from people's donations, purely from people's donations. So, I mean, I think that says something, you know. I think the people that would be scared of losing their jobs because of migrants would be the same people that would be scared of that, regardless of the economic situation.
Okay.
So I think, if anything, donations might have dropped slightly, temporarily, during a few years, because people were worried about their own, you know, their own financial crisis. But I don't think the attitude has changed because of that.
Well, also another thing that I think is true about Spanish society, again, avoiding generalizations, but, you know, how Spain reacts to other cultures is not always politically correct, especially people who are from Africa, you know, the N-word can be used quite liberally. In my experience, I've seen that quite a lot in Spain. Well, you know, it's used in a mocking and way, I think, you know, kind of like a humorous way, you know. So, I mean, people from different backgrounds like that treated differently by some people here, you know?
Well, I have to say, in my experience of living in a different country for a long time, because I've been to different countries, but I've only lived for a long time in one other, which was England, I honestly don't think that people are that different in Spain with regards like levels of racism.
Yeah.
I think the main issue is that political correctness, let's say, it's not a concept here, so people just open their mouth and will say whatever they think. But they'll also say whatever they think to you in a rude or in a way that is none of their business about you and your personality regardless. So it's something that I really dislike. And I would never defend it, but I think, you know, a lot of it is to do with the fact that people just carelessly say their opinion without thinking how they can hurt others. And I think in other countries, or for example in the case of England, I think that racism is there. And then, you know, for example, like with the issue of Brexit, as soon as like people have been pushed a little bit, it's flourished. But the thing is, like, people have been taught that is not politically correct to express it publicly.
And historically, the hysteria that we can see in America or in Britain, you know, historically as well, you know, with this linking migrants to loss of jobs, for example, has that ever existed in Spain, that type of...
Well, I don't know. I think at the same time as I was away was when the worst part of the crisis was happening here. And, yeah, I think, you know, probably that was an argument among some people, just as much as everywhere else. I don't know. as much as stupid an argument as any other country, because obviously it's more than proven that immigration hardly ever means that natives lose their jobs.
Well, exactly. The data never shows that. It shows always the contrary. You know, it's good for the economy. And even, for example, looking at the American example, that for example, he's saying that Mexicans cause more violence, or the border towns in the States are actually some of the safest towns in the country. But moving back to the documentary, so we're going to the final part now, where the refugees and asylum seekers find their voice. They're telling their story while they're moving, or you can get a sense of who they are, for example. What was your biggest takeaway from this section, this final section of the documentary?
Well, one of the things that struck me the most is that this idea that a lot of people have in Africa, that Europe is this sort of like paradise where everything is possible. And I think that, you know, a lot of people come over because of like war and violence and poverty, but somehow I get the impression that other people that perhaps are not in such an extreme situation believe that, for example, the children, as one of the women was saying, are going to have more opportunities here.
Yeah.
And I think that's partially caused by, well, probably the mafias there encourage that. Mouth to ear, like they were saying in the documentary.
Well, my two biggest takeaways, for example, I mean, as Freedom said, look, I'm talented. You know, I have ideas, I want to do things, and they want to work, you know, and they want to contribute, and they want to, because people want to, fulfill their potential and get satisfaction from being a businessman or from doing whatever they feel that they should or can do with the talents that they've been given.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the presenter, who's actually quite anonymous for most of the show, which I think is good, he crops up and he's asking off-camera questions to some of the guys, and yeah, it shows him a map, where do you think you are? And he thinks he's close to France or something, or closer to Europe. But in reality, he's quite close to where he left land.
Mm-hmm, that's true, yeah,
near Libya. And, he's devastated when he finds out that they actually haven't moved that much, you know. So it's for me, that was the saddest part of the documentary. Which, again, you mentioned Libya. Libyan Coast Guard as well, they kind of enter and exit with some kind of shadiness as well.
The so-called Coast Guard.
Like water boats, machine guns and everything. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening, in that region. And, it's touching on European indifference, but also, there are people in Europe who are receptive and trying to help. The compassion of the crew and the ship, the plight of the refugees and asylum seekers, and also kind of wider conflicts that are happening in other parts of the continent, and also in Libya, which has been in the news for the last few years as well. So, it's a big story. An hour and a half, I think, is the documentary. It can be found on what website?
Atresmedia,
La Sexta. Okay, which is in Spanish, with Spanish subtitles, but if you can understand the language, it's well worth the view. So, well, it's a big topic. We don't have time to cover everything about it, but see us back for part three. Welcome back to part three of the show. Not much to say now before we finish this little podcast of ours. You can find us on the Opinion podcast app, but also as well the podcast player and other applications. Just type us into the Google search bar. Or if you're worried about them stealing your data, Bing or any other search provider that you might be using. So we mentioned in the last week's podcast about other podcasts that we listen to, like Joe Rooney, and he was telling a story about how he gives sometimes stand-up comedy workshops to homeless people. So I don't know if you're engaged in any kind of social activity for any NGO or just off your own back, kind of touches what we spoke about today. Hit us up on LARPA1, which is our Twitter handle, or do get in touch via the website LARPA.com. So, anything else you want to say, Maria?
Nothing else. Well, we've been doing other bits and pieces that we should be showing you soon.
Okay.
Exciting stuff.
We're also working on our Marvel superhero movie. It's not licensed by Marvel, but we'll be hitting cinemas in 2020. So stay tuned for that. Okay, well, aside from that, Zena Canelli saying bye-bye.
Maria Correa saying bye.
El Arpa saying bye-bye. You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa podcast.